This lecture will be presented with a keen memory of the late John Ross Thompson, for many years the president of this, the HPB Lodge, and for some years general secretary of the New Zealand section. His memory is fittingly kept in mind because he had a most sincere interest in the welfare, the future development of this country. He inferred, and some of us, perhaps it's safer to say, he expressed a wish, and some of us believe it to be a promise, that he would come back to New Zealand for several consecutive lives with a short space of time between, so that he might work for the development of this country and the achievement of the greatness that is today latent in New Zealand. Before I go any further, I would like to explain exactly what is meant by a cult. A cult is that which is hidden. That which is hidden. And this lecture is an attempt to compare that which is hidden and not generally known, that which comes in the first place from theosophical literature, or from observation of New Zealand from a theosophical point of view, and thirdly, that which is hidden because it belongs to the occult traditions of the Maori race. An attempt will be made to compare these occult ideas with that which is factual or scientific, and presented by the geologists and other scientists who have made a survey of this country. I believe that this work is important to theosophists because, above all, theosophists should be interested in the development of their own country. And as they understand those powers which are occult, which are hidden, so will they be able to guide and possibly help the development of the country. From a deep understanding of that which is occult springs the wisdom necessary for the building of the future of this country. I fully realize that the scope of this lecture will just scratch the surface of a gigantic subject, but I do feel that there may be among you and other members of the society or the general public throughout New Zealand, people who have a knowledge of some of the things, some of the points that I'm going to talk about. And I, for one, would be very glad to have any information or any knowledge passed on where information can be gained about any of these subjects. It is hoped that a booklet will be printed someday that will contain not only the substance of this lecture, but much more information on the subject. Already, I have had duplicated the notes of this lecture, which probably will be more full than the delivered lecture from this platform. They are available. I think some of you have them, and there are a few more copies still available, free if you ask for them at the end of the lecture. The Basic Theosophical Textbook by Madame Blavatsky, The Secret Doctrine, fixes what is called one day of Brahma at about 4,000 million years, and it states that we, as men on this planet, are halfway through the evolutionary scheme, which means that this Earth is approximately, from an occult point of view, 2,000 million years old. And it is most interesting to find that the latest figure given by modern scientists is exactly the same. The age of this world is estimated to be 2,000 million years. New Zealand as a country comes into the picture very early compared to other countries. The fossil history of this country, that is, the history found by investigation of the fossil remains in rocks throughout the country by scientists, dates the first fossils, recognizable and classifiable, as about 300 million years old. In the notes, which you may like to look at later, you will find diagrams based on the geological periods of the history of the country, which give a description of the age, or rather, the parts of New Zealand that were above the sea during those 300 million years. It was not until the end of that which is called the Cretaceous, a secondary period, that it is thought that the whole of New Zealand was permanently above the sea. But for many thousands of years, many millions of years before that, large portions of New Zealand were above the sea. Now this era, this geological era, appears to be about 10 million years ago. And students of occult history will know that about 10 million years ago, there existed in the Pacific Ocean area, a large continent and landmass called Lemuria. This diagram, which I hope you can see, shows you what Lemuria looked like about 10 million years ago at its greatest extent. It had included Australia, New Zealand, most of the Pacific Islands, and stretched up towards Southeast Asia and India, from whence, at a later date, the chosen races of Lemuria were drawn and centered in Southeast Asia as a nucleus to form the Aryan root race. This is the extent of the continent. That was Australia, New Zealand, and up here, India. And at that time, occult history says, and it is substantiated by many scientists, that a large continent extending here, right across the Pacific, and also across towards East Africa, there was one continent split, as it were, by a narrow canal. The map of that, which comes from Lost Lemuria by Scott Elliott, is here on the table, and those of you who are interested could have a look at it after the lecture. But what is interesting to me is that the Lemurian influence in New Zealand is undoubtedly strong, and especially on the west coast of New Zealand, because from the west coast here extended the great landmass of Lemuria, whereas the east coast of New Zealand bordered the edge of the continent, and at a later date, that the continent shrunk, as it were, back from the southeast towards the northwest, and finished at the edge of the east coast of New Zealand. Now, it's interesting to find that, I read this in a guidebook when I went down the west coast of the South Island, it's interesting to find that geologists say that the gold of the west coast of New Zealand did not come from the southern Alps, but was washed down from mountains to the west of New Zealand at a very early period and deposited among the lower mountains and the flatland and that strip that is westland. Now, when you look at the map of Lemuria here below on the table, you will see that there was a major plateau of mountains between Australia and New Zealand in the early maps of Lemuria. The east coast, as I said, has been much more demagnetized, if I may use the word, by the influence of water and has not the strength of the Lemurian influence that the west coast has. If you compare Pihau, or Annawata, or parts of the west coast, with Mount Maunganui, in the parts of the west coast, with Mount Maunganui on the east coast, you will immediately see the difference in the rugged nature and magnetism of the two. More obvious is the difference between the Franz Josef Glacier, for instance, and the coastline at, say, Timaru. But I will speak about this later. Occult tradition says that New Zealand probably existed throughout all the catastrophes of those 300 million years with, as it were, some continuity. Science, however, suggests that the end of the tertiary period was the first time that all the present New Zealand was above the sea, and that, as I said, was about 10 million years ago. However, it's impossible to establish accurate geological dates, and those dates, which we call occult, are approximate only. But it is safe to say that New Zealand, as a whole country, has been above the sea for the whole of what occultists call the Atlantean period, the fourth root race period. This period is the period that is covered by the time in which the continent of Atlantis was above the sea in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and included parts of America and Europe. New Zealand was not separated from Australia until about 500,000 years ago, about 500,000 years ago. But the break was complete. And those of us who believe that there is a ties, occult ties, which will draw the two countries closer together in the future, must realize that the break has existed for a very long time. The more recent history of New Zealand is one of alternating ice ages, when the glaciers came down much closer to the sea than they are now, and almost tropical periods when the heat of the country was much greater than it is now. Those ice ages, which of course were not confined to New Zealand, are most interesting subjects of study, but it's not possible for me tonight to go into their causes and the scope of their extent and effect upon the countries of the world. Following that, there was a period of great volcanic activity in the country. Most of the North Island was rent asunder by volcanic activity, and nearly all the east coast of the South Island, including Lyttelton and most of the district around Otago, was also affected by volcanic influence, but not the west coast of the South Island, where, as I said before, the Lemurian influence seems to have been unaffected by catastrophic and other types of changes. It's interesting to speculate from an occult point of view about the influence of the volcanoes and volcanic activity in this country. Many theosophical and other writers have suggested that the center of the earth is a storehouse of energy from which some of the basic energies required by human beings come. And we are unique, I think, in this country, among the countries of the world, in having volcanic action so widespread across the whole country, and its effect, from an occult point of view, might be quite strong indeed. The continuity of life in New Zealand has been shown by the findings, by excavation of moa bones throughout the country. The oldest known skeleton of a moa was excavated in 1889 during excavations near Timaru for the formation of the North Mole. It was, I think, I haven't got the distance, but I think about 70 or 80 feet below the surface, and its age is estimated by scientists to be between 2 and 7,000 years. I'm sorry. 2 and 7 million years. That means that it is safe to say that the moa roamed this country for at least 5 million years continuously. Not only the moa, a wingless eagle, the kiwi, and many other birds have been found. And it's interesting to note that the skeletons of those birds as found 5 million, the skeletons 5 million years old are almost exactly the same as the skeletons found of the modern kiwi, shall we say, or the more recently discovered skeletons of the moa. It's possible that the small moa is still alive, and it certainly was alive when white men first came to this country. But that in itself is an interesting subject, one that I won't have time to go in tonight. But it's interesting to speculate on the basic difference between the emu and the moa. The emu is a comparatively lightly built bird. The moa had tremendous legs and a tremendous width. You look at the book down below here, Moa and Moa Hunters, published recently by Roger Duff at the Canterbury Museum. You will get the picture of the moa, which was short and stocky and quite different from the emu. Both, of course, are probably the carryovers of Lemurian bird-like forms. The history of man in New Zealand is disappointingly short. It goes back only about 1,000 years. The Maoris have a tradition about a people they call the Tangata Whenua, a red-haired race which lived in New Zealand before they came. They also have a tradition about the Patupahiriri. I'm sorry about my Maori pronunciation, it's not very good. But that race is illustrated in a book by Dittmer, which is open on the table here below, that you might like to look at afterwards. But these people appear most likely to belong to the fairy kingdom, that kingdom which many theosophists believe looks after and guides the development of the plant world. There is no, that I have found so far anyway, no definite tradition among the Maoris of any people living in the country before they came. In The Lives of Alcyone, a book written by Mrs. Besant and Mr. Leadbeater, we find it was an investigation into the lives of an individual, the previous incarnations of one individual, And in that book we find described a life in New Zealand dated about 25,000 years ago. Now that was, according to science, about the time of the last ice age in New Zealand. But unfortunately, in the description of that life, there are no details given. There is only a general description of a more civilized race living on the fringes of the seaboard of the country, at war or in conflict with a more barbaric race which lived in the mountain country. In his book, The Story of New Zealand by A.H. Reid, Mr. Reid tells us of a finding of a stump of a tree which had obviously been cut by an axe or some other implement in an Auckland street in 1875, if my memory is correct, and about 25 feet below the surface during excavations. Now, the important point is that that tree stump was below the volcanic ash. It was in a layer of clay and earth which belonged to a previous era, before the volcanic eruption of Mount Eden and Rangitoto. Mount Eden is probably some thousands of years ago, and Rangitoto at least 1,000 years ago. So that tree stump was cut by somebody living in this country before the Maoris. But as yet, I have found no other evidence of any race living before the Maoris. Now you're going to ask me about the Moriori. The Moriori has been definitely established as a branch of the Polynesian race, a pre-fleet branch. The first migration of the Polynesians took place about 1,000 years ago, about 900 and something AD. And that first migration split in two, as it were, some coming to New Zealand and becoming the Moa hunters, and others going to the Chatham Islands, and from the name of one of their surviving chiefs, the name Moriori came. But it has been proved by excavations in the Wairau Bar of graves of chieftains in 1939. The discovery, incidentally, was made by a schoolboy. And the antefacts and the remains of these graves of chieftains, of the Moa hunters, has shown them to be exactly the same as some of the races living in the Polynesian islands at that time. So we cannot say that the Moriori were a pre-Maori race. They are only an early Polynesian race. Now the Maoris themselves, who came at a later date, the main fleets at about 1100 AD and 1300 AD, have played a considerable part in the development of this country, and their influence is hard to assess, but is probably more considerable than we think on first thoughts. It is very interesting to find a strong evidence that the Maoris came from the cradle of the fifth root race, the Aryan root race, in Southeast Asia. Doubtless they are a mixed race. There are Melanesians mixed with them. There are probably Negroid types. It is possible that the Kon-Tiki theory is correct, and that there is blood of the Atlantean people from Peru and South America mixed with the original Aryan stock of the Maori race. I think it's safe to say that there is a large admixture. And if you go to, say, Rotorua, and carefully look at the Maori types. If you look at the Maoris, those places or other places, and look carefully, you will notice that the Maori faces differ. Some of them are broad and wide and good-natured. Others are more hatchet-faced, like the North American Indians. I think you could all prove for yourself, to your own satisfaction, that they are a mixed race. But I do suggest that in the inner esoteric core of the teaching, the highest teaching of the Maori Tohunga, there appears to have been a philosophy which comes direct and undiluted from the original spiritual teaching of the ancient wisdom, the ancient wisdom of the Aryan root race. In his book, Man, Whence, How, and Whither, which is a survey of the development of all the races of this world, Mr. Leadbeater makes this statement. The second mighty empire, the South Indian kingdom, was used by the Manu as a subsidiary center of radiation on other occasions than that of the Aryanizing of Egypt. He sent out from it colonists to Java, to Australia, and to the islands of Polynesia, which accounts for the Aryan strain to be observed even today in what are called the brown Polynesians, in contradistinction to the black fuzzy-haired Melanesians. That is the occult statement. This is the scientific explanation. The Polynesians exist in what is called the Polynesian Triangle, which extends from Hawaii in the north and Easter Island in the east to New Zealand in the southwest. They came by way of India, and that's very well established, wonderful still. They returned after periods of years on special occasions to attend religious festivals at Rangiatea. They came back, as it were, all at the same time, perhaps using some form of telepathy to attract and to call them back. It's not exactly known. But they came back and met all the chiefs of the tribes in that center. The whole movement here took at least 2,000 years, probably a nearer 3,000 years, and they were in this center, radiating out some thousands of years before there was tribal discord, and some of the races which traveled to, say, outlying New Zealand, broke their connections with the main race at Hawaiki or Rangiatea. Now, it's interesting to see how this is arrived at. If you take 25 years as the average generation, the Maori, you can, if you know the tribal history of any particular person, go back and work out your dates. Now, I don't know how long ago, but a chief called Tamarua Waiari, before the Land Commission at Turitoki, traced his ancestors back for 34 generations. If we take the 25 years I mentioned and multiply it by 34, we get something like 850 years. And the history for 850 years in his particular family was capable of being told by him. He mentioned 1,400 names during that recital, which took 3 or 4 days. And that was factually recorded by Europeans. So you can see that the Maori history is accurate and the dates can be established very well. There is, as I mentioned before, the Kon-Tiki theory that the Maoris came from South America. I would just like to mention that in the History of Otago, a very monumental volume, which I dipped into a year or two ago, there is mentioned a chief who was a believer in the false prophet Tiki. Tiki Kon-Tiki, of course, was the god of the Peruvians, after which the Kon-Tiki raft was called. So it may be that that other religion, in contradistinction to the normal Maori religion, was, as it were, the unorthodox religion among the Maoris.